You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
I want to talk about knowing this morning, this little passage at the end of this super famous chapter in 1 Corinthians 13. One of these verses has come up in almost every teaching so far. I wanted just to zoom out a little bit and talk about the Corinthians and the context for this instruction on knowing and seeing. The Corinthians had problems. You guys know that. And, part of it was their view of knowledge. They were very puffed up with their own knowledge. They thought they knew everything. There were some things they didn't really understand. You know, Paul writes, "Who can know the Lord's thoughts? Who knows enough to teach him?" Quoting the book of Isaiah. Yeah, they didn't understand how much higher God's thoughts were than their thoughts. God says, "You know, my thoughts are so much higher than your thoughts, like the heavens are higher than the earth." They didn't understand that. They had too elevated a view of their own thoughts. Glad we don't have that problem. He also says, "Judge nothing before the appointed time. Wait until the Lord comes." You have now and you have then. And he says, now, there's so many things hidden in darkness. He's going to bring to light what is hidden in darkness. He will expose the motives of the heart. So much we can't see now. So many limits to our knowledge, to our seeing. And at that time, he says, each will receive their praise from God. And so not only did they need to understand the gap between the loftiness of God's thoughts and the smallness of their own human thoughts, they also needed to understand the difference between what they can see now and what they're going to be able to see then when God bridges this gap. When God gives us a new upgrade, a new level of insight or understanding. It's the highness and the lowness, and it's the now and it's the then. And so at the end of this chapter on love, where he's talking about love and knowledge, he says, "For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away." And notice the contrast here. A lot of contrast in this passage. He says, now we know in part, the partial. And he contrasts the partial with the perfect. Now partial knowledge, then perfect knowledge. Why do we only know in part right now? There's a lot of reasons for that. For one, our perspective is limited. We only have one small little piece of the picture. There's this artist, Bernard Prosse, who makes artwork out of random objects. And one of the things he does in some of his work is he arranges them in such a way that from this angle, all you see is a big pile of junk. If you take a few steps to the left and look at it from another angle, it looks completely different. This is the same thing you're looking at. And how often in our lives are we looking at what's happening? It just looks like the picture on the left. It looks like a bunch of junk. It looks like random things thrown everywhere. And then what will happen is there will be a moment where God will bring us over and he'll say, no, look at it from this angle right here. And we're like, whoa, it's not random. It's not chaos. It's brilliant. It's brilliant, God. And he will do some of that in this life. But we have a promise here from God that now we know in part. God has told us this ahead of time. You're not going to get the whole story now. And so sometimes we have to look at the thing on the left and say, you know, I know God. And I know the way God has dealt with me in the past, and I know his promises. And I've got to believe that at some point, that picture on the left, I'm going to see a different angle on it, and it's going to look a lot more like the work of an artist than something that a tornado came through and did. Our perspective is limited. Also, another reason we only know in part is because we keep forgetting things. You know, one of the great things about marriage after 20 years, I've been married 20 years, is that you're still learning new things about your spouse all the time. One of the great things about being in your 40s is you start forgetting all these things you already knew about your spouse. And so there's even more to learn. It's like the magic is infused into the relationship thanks to my own forgetfulness. And that's not going to get any better. That gets worse, our forgetfulness. How often do we look back at old emails, old journal entries, old notes, and we're like, wow, I wrote that. That definitely happened. No memory of that. I remember the opposite. Our memories are very fickle. Part of the problem is our vision and our memories are tainted by sin. Jesus tells us this. He warns us of this. Matthew 7, verse 5. He says, "You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." Yeah, Jesus here, he's assuming you have a log in your eye. He's assuming you have things clouding your vision. This is the sin nature Rhino was talking about. We have sin, and it's blocking our view. And what does he say? He gives us an order here, right? He says, first take the log out. First, before you go messing with somebody's eye, eye is a delicate thing. I can barely touch my own eye. I don't want somebody else touching my eye, especially somebody with a log sticking out of their eye. And he says, you just don't see very clearly. We can see a little more clearly now, though, for those that have ears to hear. He says, you want to see a little more clearly in this life? Take the log out of your eye. Get before the Lord honestly. Ask him, what part have I played in this? What's my contribution to this conflict? And he says, then you will see clearly. Yes, we can actually see more clearly in this life if we're willing to be humble. The humble receive wisdom. The humble receive insight from God. And, I've actually talked with a number of experts in this field, of people that help Christians resolve conflicts. And one of the main themes that's come out of a number of these conversations is they keep pointing back to this verse right here. They say, if you have Christians in conflict, if you can get them to take Matthew 7, 5 seriously, to take the log out of their eye, then a lot of the other things in that conflict seem to often fall into place. Not always, but this is a key. And so you got people in your church stuck in conflict, stuck in bitterness, stuck in persistent criticism. Are you yourself stuck? Why not listen to Jesus? Why not take that person to Matthew 7 and study through this and talk about taking the log out of their eye, getting truly before God with humility and seeing what he shows you? Yeah, we can see a little more clearly, but our vision is marred by sin. This bestseller, Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me, a secular book proving the biblical worldview on sin. They've got a chapter called Memory, the Self-Justifying Historian. When two people produce entirely different memories of the same event, observers usually assume one of them is lying. Of course, some people do, but sometimes they don't think they're lying. All of us, as we tell our stories, add details and omit inconvenient facts. We give the tale a small self-enhancing spin, and that spin goes over so well. The next time, we add a slightly more dramatic embellishment. Eventually, the way we remember the event may bring us a far distance from what actually happened. And in this way, memory becomes our personal live-in, self-justifying historian. We see this in Scripture. The Israelites, the week they left Egypt, where they were enslaved and their babies were getting killed. "Moses, why'd you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians." "No, you didn't. You never said that. But I bet you could have hooked them up to a lie detector test at this very moment as they were pressed against the Red Sea, and they could have passed that lie detector test. Because they genuinely believed it in that moment, because their memories had been tainted by sin. The heart's deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" Fortunately, Yahweh searches the heart and examines the mind. He's not confused. He's got that higher knowing, that perfect knowing. We got the distorted partial knowing. Oh, here's another one. Handling allegations in a ministry. This is by a Christian lawyer, former missionary kid, got a law degree, has been working with churches for decades. She's got a chapter called Memory and Credibility Issues. "One subset of memory change," she writes, "is social contagion theory or memory conformity theory, which looks at the effect of social interactions with others on memory and reporting. Social contagion theory refers to the spread of a memory from one person to another by means of social interaction." What do we mean? In some cases, the speaker can impose a new memory onto the listener. a memory of something the listener did not experience. Very common. Another instance, the speaker imposes on the listener an alternative rendering of something they did experience. But it's got a sinister twist. Isn't this what Satan's doing all the time? We unwittingly do this to each other. Memory conformity, on the other hand, refers to instances where two people talk about a past event, and what one person says can influence what the other person reports about the event. One study suggests that people who discuss organizational situations in online settings may have a similar experience of memory conformity. It doesn't have to be face-to-face. It can be on Reddit. It can be online somewhere. People start talking about their experiences, and they all start conforming to the same negative picture. Friend groups who discuss events may take the truth of others' memories for granted and may be less able to make distinctions between what they personally did and did not see. And this is why gossip is so destructive to the church. This is why negativity is so destructive to the church. It's because we start having conversations, and everybody wants the latest, and then all of a sudden, this new reality starts to form that's twisted by Satan and sin and our own tainted memories. And we become certain of what happened, and in reality, it didn't. Or it didn't happen that way. This happens to all of us. One of the main application points here is humility, Paul is saying to the Corinthians, and humility for us. Why are we so certain of our memory? It's fallen, it's broken, we're brain damaged by the fall. We need to have a little more humility and a little more caution about our very minds playing tricks on us. Finally, why do we know in part? Because God hides some things from us. Proverbs 25:2. It is the privilege of God to conceal a matter, or the glory of God to conceal a matter. Yeah, he's allowed to do that. Why does he do that? Sometimes because he wants us to work for it. He wants us to seek. Seek for wisdom as you would for hidden treasures, Proverbs 2:4. Sometimes there's truths we just can't handle, either at this point in our lives or at all in this life. Think about Job. You get to the end of the book of Job. God doesn't tell him the whole thing with Satan. And imagine if he did. You see, Job, well, Satan was wandering the earth, and he came in, and he thought you weren't very righteous, and I brought you up, and then he just torched everything. Ruined your life. And Job would be like, oh, that really clears it up. He didn't need to know that. Wouldn't have helped. He would have more questions. He needed to trust the one who did know. That's what he needed. And there's things we just can't handle in this life that will make more sense then. Some things are just none of our business. I love in Narnia, a horse and his boy, where the one main character is prying Aslan with questions about the other main character's life, and Aslan says, my child, I'm telling you your story, not hers. I don't tell anyone anything but their own story. There's aspects of other stories that God's like, you don't need to know that. That's between me and them. And maybe someday in heaven, you'll be in a better place where you can see that story. Well, when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. So we're partial, and then it's the perfect. You know, this is completeness, maturity, the supreme goal. This is that teleos word from last night that Conrad mentioned. It's not omniscience. Even today in heaven, angels are longing to look into the plan of God in 1 Peter 1. They're asking God questions in Zechariah 1. The saints in heaven are saying, how long, O Lord, longing to know? What's next? What are you doing, God? No, we won't. God's thoughts will always be so much higher than our thoughts. It's not omniscience. It's not oblivion either. You know, when we get to heaven, remember that scene at the end of Men in Black? Where Tommy Lee Jones is basically getting ready to retire from the Men in Black business. And it's actually a pretty sad scene. He's like, I've seen so many painful things. So many painful things have happened to me. I need you to wipe my memory. I want a memory wipe. And he just stands there with this thing before his eyes to have everything wiped away. And God says, I'm not doing a memory wipe. You're not going to remember less or know less. You're actually going to see things more clearly. And we don't understand how the painful things in our lives, how a clearer understanding would actually help. And yet, now we see in part, but when the completeness comes, the maturity comes, the partial will be done away. God will upgrade our mental faculties. There'll be things we can't look directly at the sun right now. You remember that solar eclipse from a couple of years ago? You know, they gave us all these glasses, and everybody's just standing there looking through these thick glasses at the solar eclipse because apparently you're going to go blind if you take those off. It's terrifying. But you know, when we get to heaven, we don't have to have this eclipse, this partial view. You know, our eyes can handle the light. We get to heaven, we're just going to rip off those eclipse glasses. Look straight at the sun with no fear, no worries. Our equipment will be upgraded. It's like a new laptop that just can run that new software so much better. Paul gives another analogy, another contrast. We have the partial and the complete. Now we've got the child and the adult. He says, when I was a child, I used to speak like a child and think like a child and reason like a child. But when I became a man, I did away with childish things. You see the contrast here. He's really driving this home. Five times he says, what's our knowing like now? A child, a child, a child, a child, childish things. Getting the point? You know, sometimes it's good to be like a child. There's certain things it's not, including our understanding, our thinking. And it's fine for a child. Their thinking is developing. But, you know, kids, they can only handle so much. I mean, the most brilliant musings of a three-year-old would be pretty simple for most adults to understand. You know, when children think about wanting to grow up, they're thinking about maybe freedoms they would have or, you know, strength or height. But they're not thinking, I want to read Kierkegaard someday. Differential equations. You know, kids are into Elmo, right? Which is great for three-year-olds. But it's so annoying for adult brains. It's just what the kid needs. ABC books. A, apple, airplane, aardvark. It's like, please, God, give me something more. But for them, it's awesome. But at some point, we got to put the Elmo and the ABC book away, and we got to move on to more. Paul says, that's what I did. And the difference between the adult thinking and the childish thinking, it's like, that's nothing compared to what the difference between now and the resurrected mind thinking. And then finally, he says, for now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I'll know fully, just as I also have been fully known. So another analogy. He says a couple things about how we see. He says, now we see in a mirror. You know, mirrors back then weren't awesome. Even mirrors today have problems. A lot of problems with mirrors. When you look at something in a mirror, you know, it's a flipped image. Right is left, left is right, the writing's all backward. I'm looking this way, the mirror image is looking that way. It's the opposite direction. There's imperfections on mirrors. Might be blemishes, concave, convex. There's always an edge to the mirror that limits the field of vision. It always ends at a certain point. Our perspective is also limited. There are imperfections in our thinking. Our image is flipped because we see things through the lens of the self. Selfish sin nature. You can't see yourself from most angles. Like, you can kind of do one of these, but like, you need another mirror. You need multiple mirrors to see other angles. And we got a lot of blind spots in our seeing. We can only see ourselves from a few angles. Mirrors only show the surface. You know, if this was an x-ray, it could show the bones. If this was an MRI, we could step through layer by layer of what that is seeing. Like, God is that way. God can see through. God can see every level. God, mirrors can't show the thoughts. and intentions of the heart, the motives. We can only guess at those and the feelings. God sees that all. Will we see that way in heaven? I think it'll be upgraded. I know it'll be upgraded. The question is, what exactly will we see? Mirrors show a narrow band of light. They don't show UV rays. There's spectrums of light that we just can't see. We need layers. We need filters. We need enhancements to see that. There's a lot of things we just can't see. I mean, what spectrum of light are the angels on? The unseen realities. There's a lot we don't see that is very real. And yet, we're limited. Limited magnification. You know, we can see a certain magnification with a mirror, but we'd need something special to see a close-up of the skin on our face. We're like, I want to look at the distant galaxies. You need a pretty specialized mirror and viewpoint to see that. We got a limited perspective. Limited perspective. And finally, mirrors only show the present. We can't say, show me 20 years ago in this mirror. Wouldn't that be cool? Show me 20 years from now in this mirror. God can see all that, though. And in heaven, I believe our seeing, we will be able to see past and future much more clearly. He says, now we see in a mirror. And he also says, now we see dimly. The word dimly is literally en enigmata, in a riddle. We see through a mirror, and we see in a riddle. And, you know, riddles, they're confusing at first. And usually there's some like little key insight, some little key technique to solve them, to figure them out. You know, you think about a Rubik's Cube. My son's really into these right now. You know, you just stare at it, it's like, I will never be able to solve a Rubik's Cube. But there's these little things online. We're like, well, here's the little algorithms that you use. And so like I'll hand my son a Rubik's Cube and he's like, and he just hands it back and it's solved. I'm like, I do not understand how you just did that. I haven't really tried, but I do not understand it. And if we know kind of the little tricks for how to solve that riddle, that puzzle, it actually becomes a lot more simple. A lot more simple. And I wonder how many of the things we look at our lives, and they look like this Rubik's Cube, a random collection of things, and there's no way we can make it fit together. And we're going to get to heaven, and God's going to be like, oh, if you just kind of, and he's going to hand it back to us, and we're like, wow, it's the Mona Lisa. And knowing God, he'll kind of show us how to do the little algorithms, how to solve the riddle, and then we'll see it come together. We're like, how could I not see that before? You ever do these two-minute mysteries, little brain teasers? You know, we've gotten into hiking with our family from when our kids were sort of young. And, you know, hiking with kids sounds a lot easier than it actually is. I found one of the keys is bringing lots of snacks to bribe them to keep walking. A second one, though, is you got to have something to talk about. One of the things we've landed on is these little riddles, you know, these little where you can ask yes, no questions to figure it out. And first, it just seems so confusing, and then it's good. You know, it's like the one you guys have probably heard where the father and his son are in a horrible car crash, and the father is killed, and the son is in critical condition, and he's rushed to the hospital, and they wheel him into the emergency room, and the surgeon steps in and takes one look at the boy and says, I cannot operate on this boy. He's my son. And, you know, the kids are just staring at it like, what? Asking all these questions, all these things, and then and finally, and it just seems so confusing until you have the one little piece of information. The surgeon is a woman. It's his mom. And you realize, how could I not see that? We had a bias. We had a limited perspective. And once you have that little piece of information, the riddle just unfolds. And now a lot of our seeing and knowing, it's in a riddle. We're like, I do not understand this God. Someday we'll see a lot more clearly. We'll no longer see in a riddle. We'll have the riddle maker, the one who knows all, help us to see the key pieces of information that we were missing. Often our knowledge is not inaccurate, it's just incomplete. It's just incomplete. And we get so angry at God and we want the answers now. And it's like, you know, there's more, but you're just not ready for that yet. But someday you will. And we cling to that promise by faith. It's the contrast between now and then. Now he says, we know in part, and I was a child, like a child, like a child, like a child, childish things, through a mirror in a riddle. That's our current knowing. But then, when maturity comes, he says, I'll become adult and put away childish things, and I'll be face to face with God, and I'll know fully, just as I am fully known. Yes, not only will we see God more clearly, but, you know, God is not just like the sun, you know, which the sun is a light we can see, but it's also the light by which we see everything else. And so this clearer knowledge of God will give us clearer knowledge on everything. And his light will shine like the sun on the new heavens and the new earth. What might we know and learn? It's fun to just imagine. It's fun to just think about this. You know, a few things I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing, how did God use our efforts to serve him? You know, our financial giving. Paul says, I'm not seeking the gift. I'm seeking the profit that increases to your account. You know, what profit has increased to our account? Jesus said, you know, those who give in secret, your heavenly Father sees and will reward. You know, who gave money to support the people in ministries that reached me for Christ? I have no idea. I'd like to meet them. I'd like to thank them for sacrificing their money to give something or someone that had such an impact in my life. The people who equipped me, the people who discipled me. God can trace all that back to its roots. What about the ones that reached my parents for Christ? I'd like to talk to them too. I'd like to say thank you. Had such an impact in me coming to know Christ. How did God use the money I've given away? I've given away a lot of money over the years. Where did it all go? I don't know. You see tiny little snippets. We see in part. You know, our world missions. Last count, about 36,000 people attending home church. Almost 2,500 leaders. I've met a few of these people. It's been so edifying. I don't have time to meet them all. I don't speak the same language as most of them. But I'd like to. Why not in heaven go meet all 36,000 of them? Hear their stories. We'll have the time. There's no limits on time. I would love to hear. I'd love to maybe learn their language and then talk with them about it. You know, the money I've given here in Columbus, where is it gone? What has God done with it? I don't know. I just put it in his hands a lot of times. And I see little things. I don't see it all. But in heaven, we'll know in full. Our prayers. Who are my Christian ancestors? Did they pray for me? I'd love to meet them. I'd love to thank them. Who else prayed for me? I want them to see how God answered those prayers. God can sit with both of us and explain it. How much more did he give me because of someone else's prayers for me? What did he rescue me from because of someone else's prayers for me? How did God answer my prayers? You know, we try to notice answered prayers. We see so little. 2 Corinthians 5, we walk by faith, not by sight in this life. But someday, we're going to see more clearly. The partial will be done away with, and then we'll know in full. And then we'll see the ways God used those prayers. Our service. I want to thank those who had an impact on my life. I don't know most of them, I'm sure. I haven't seen it yet. It's been done in secret, but I want to know. I want to talk to them. In this church and around the world, I want to talk to authors who've had an impact on my life, pastors who've shared their example, especially those who've shared their failures. And I want to say thank you so much for sharing God's work in your life and for the impact and comfort it brought to me in my life. It kept me going. I want to learn how God used my service. You know, Matthew 6:5, Jesus says, unfortunately for some, they've already had their reward in full for things they've done for God here. That's not what I want. I want it later. It's going to be a lot better later. But, you know, so many times, like, the big thing I did that I think that's really the thing that's going to have an impact. I don't know if it really did. But then people come up and be like, hey, you said this thing last week, last year, a few years ago, and it just really had an impact on my life. And I'm like, I have no memory of saying that. So many of the things that God seems to use are the things I have no memory of saying. And I think he likes it that way. I think he hides some of the fruit of our service from us because we just couldn't handle it. Because he wants us to get the reward later. He doesn't want us to blow our money now, our reward now. He wants it later. How has God used my service? It's hard to tell what he uses. But he knows. That's why we got to be faithful no matter how it looks like the fruit that we're bearing. We'll see, like Conrad talked about last night, who was truly great in the kingdom of God. Some people that we thought were pretty great may not be so great up there. Some people that were totally unnoticeable will be the greatest. Some people, we thought they were great for one reason, but it was actually for another reason. We thought it was their gifting. We thought it was their opportunities. And as it turns out, it was the long secret hours of prayer. It was the quiet hidden hours of drinking in the Word of God. It was doing the thing and letting someone else get credit for it. It's taking the blame even though it wasn't their fault. Absorbing insults while reviling, not reviling in return, but turning the other cheek. That's greatness in the kingdom of God. That's the kind of thing we're going to see. We're going to see it. God's going to show us. We're going to see God's providence. See God's providence, his sovereign hand. How did God work all things together for good? It sure doesn't seem like it sometimes. We take that one by faith. But he'll take us back. He'll clear up our memories. He'll show us just what he was doing at different points in time. He'll show us what he saved us from, and he'll show us what things he gave us that we never would have had. God knows alternate futures. Will he reveal some to us? Will he reveal those? Will we get to see what would have happened if we'd taken down that path of sin? Will we see what our lives would have been like if God had never rescued us? You know, it's a wonderful life kind of thing. Will we see that? And if, as we do, I bet we will be even more grateful to God for what he has given us, for his grace in our lives. The grace of God will be magnified as we see the gap between what could have been and what was. You know, we'll see the providential circumstances. You know, where I got stuck behind that slow driver and I was so frustrated, it turns out a guy was going to run a red light up ahead. Would have crushed my car and killed me or rendered me disabled for life. We had no idea. We're just mad about the bad driving in Columbus. Randy Alcorn says, how many times have we whined and groaned about the very circumstances God used to save us? And heaven will find that out. And we'll praise God for each and every one of these praise prompters. We'll know angels. I'm looking forward to knowing the angels. Angels are all around us. They're real personal beings. A moment of terror, Elisha's servant is freaking out. Elisha says, don't be afraid. There's more on our side than on theirs. And then Elisha prayed, oh, Yahweh, open his eyes and let them see. Yahweh opened the young man's eyes, and when he looked up, he saw. The hillside around Elisha was filled with horses and chariots of fire. Oh, that we could see. And in heaven, we'll be able to look back and see the unseen angelic realities. Will we get to know angels and learn from them? I bet we will. Humans interact with angels on earth. How much more in heaven? What was it like to watch God create the world? I want to ask. When the morning stars sang for joy and the angels rejoiced, what was that like? The fall of Satan, there was war in heaven. What does that mean? And what was that like for you? How did this come about? I want to know more. Did you get to sing the night Jesus was born? What was it like when you found out the Son of God was going to put on flesh? How was it to see this lofty being die on the cross? How did you hold back from rescuing, from executing the wrath of God. And we'll see Christ through another lens, the lens of the angels. Will we meet our guardian angels? Scripture seems to indicate we have angels watching over us, protecting us. I want to talk to mine. When were you assigned to me? Have you guarded anybody else famous that I might know? Did you know God's plans for my life before I did? How much did you know? What did you protect me from? I want to meet the ones for my kids. I want to thank them. Because as a parent, you can only do so much to protect your children. And they've guarded them. What did you rescue them from? How did my son not die as a child? There's so much I want to know. And then we'll know fully. There's people I want to know. I want to know the martyrs and their stories. Jim Elliot, the moment you realize I'm actually going to die for Christ. Tell me about that. Tell me about that as you thought of your one-year-old daughter back at home with your young wife. And can you believe what God did through her? I want to deepen existing friendships. So many friendships are cut short for so many reasons. Sometimes for the call of God to go serve him elsewhere. Sometimes for planting. But those friendships are just on hold. We'll be able to deepen those in heaven. There'll be no shortage of time in heaven. We'll make new friends. It's possible some of your best friends in heaven will be people you haven't even met until you get to heaven. Maybe the person you sit next to at the wedding feast of the Lamb. You'll become dear friends in heaven. I've got a category for that. How cool will that be? Children who've passed away, including the unborn. Will we get to raise these children in heaven? Will some of us who are never able to have children realize the answer to those prayers was not a no, it was just wait a little longer. And you get to raise them in a much better place to raise a child. We will see people in the fullness of youth and health. It's so sad to see people get old. Some people I've only ever known in their elderly state, in a disabled state. But in heaven, we'll see them much greater than the full flower of youth. Alcorn says, elderly or bedridden Christians don't look back to the peak of their prowess. They look forward to it. And without Christ, you just long for the old days. And all you have is memories, and the memories are fading. But with Christ, none of us have peaked. What will that be like? What will that be like? And finally, we will know God's comfort. What about all the disappointments and missed opportunities in this life? Alcorn writes, the smartest person God ever created in this world may never have learned to read because he or she had no opportunity. The most musically gifted person may never have touched a musical instrument. The greatest athlete may never have competed in a game. The sport you're best at may be a sport you've never tried. Pickleball. Your favorite hobby, one you've never thought of. And living under the curse means we miss countless opportunities. There's no sugarcoating that. The reversing of the curse and the resurrection of our bodies and our earth means we'll regain lost opportunities and inherit many more besides. People justify selfishness all the time. YOLO, bucket list. YOLO's wrong. It's YODO for Christians. You only die once, but then you will live forever. The greatest opportunities will be there. It should keep us from bitterness. This should give us restraint, knowing we'll have the next life to do even more of this thing. How can we be happy in heaven when people we love are not there? Parents, siblings, children, the most painful of all. Some of us are like, God, give me that memory wipe. God says, no. I don't know how this is possible. But he says he will wipe every tear from their eyes. It will be the supernatural act of comforting with full memory, clearer insight, and joy and no more crying and no more pain. Because he's made all things new. I don't know how that will happen. We must cling to this promise, though. You must cling to this promise. You don't understand now because you know in part. You don't know like you'll know then. But one day, God will keep his promise. And he will wipe every tear. And you must let the pain drive you to promises like this and into the arms of your loving father who's lost a lot of his kids too. And what about the deepest hurts in our lives? I was abused. I was victimized. I was traumatized. There's things broken in me that I don't know if they're going to get fixed here in this life. And I would say, first of all, don't underestimate the healing power of God. Hang in there. But second of all, cling to promises like this. Where God says, the psalmist says, you've collected all my tears in your bottle. He sees them all, and he'll wipe them all from your eyes. A tremendous final act of comforting. No memory wipe. Comfort. Insight from God. I'll leave you with this. There's a lot we don't know right now. There's a lot. But we know the one who knows. We can trust him. We can draw near to him, and we can count on the promise that now we know in part. But then, I will know fully just as I also am fully known.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.